Welcome, everyone, to episode 297 of the NBA podcast. I'm Brian Toporek, and we have our first big trade to talk about. It came out late East Coast time Tuesday night. It is a four-team mega deal involving Atlanta, Denver, Houston, and Minnesota. Clint Capella, Robert Covington, Malik Beasley all involved. So we will get into what it means for all four of these teams and hope that nothing breaks in the next couple hours. Before we get into that, a reminder that you can follow us on Twitter at the NBA Pod. You can find our Twitter handles in our bio, so give us a follow as well. You can also find us on iTunes or wherever else podcasts are found. On iTunes, please subscribe, download, leave some five-star reviews. And we're now being hosted on Spreaker, so check them out on Twitter at Spreaker. Joining me today, as always, is my very stable genius of a co-host, Morten Jensen. Morten, how's it going?
It's going well, because for once, our roles are in reverse. I'm not the one being up at ungodly hours. You are. So, Brian, how does it feel, man?
It does not feel good. I was just thinking, I think the last time this happened was the Kawhi trade, except that day I was not just coming off of work. I was coming off of, I think it was the day after July 4th, because I was hanging out with my dog, who was terrified because people down south shoot off fireworks for a week after. So I was just like hanging out on his dog bed when all of those tweets came through. So tonight I knew what was happening immediately. But yeah, it's about 1:30 here. My brain is broken, and the next 2 days are only going to be worse because whoever thought it was a good idea to put college football national signing day the day before the NBA trade deadline, I hope there is a special circle in hell reserved for you.
Well, welcome to my world.
Yeah. So Mort, let's get into it. I'm gonna just read off the terms of the trade, and then we'll break it down by team, because I know, you know, as the report first came out, it was okay, four team trade, here are the big pieces, and then for the next 30 minutes it was just a steady trickle of assets and players continuing to get added to this deal, to the extent that tomorrow I'm gonna wake up and somehow like Al Horford's gonna be involved. Hopefully.
Yeah.
All right. So Atlanta is receiving Clint Capella and Nene. Denver is receiving Keita Bates-Diop, Gerald Green, who is out for the year, Shabazz Napier, Noah Vonleh, and Houston's 2020 first-round pick. Houston is receiving Robert Covington, Jordan Bell, and Golden State's 2024 second-round pick via Atlanta. Minnesota is receiving Malik Beasley, Juan Hernan Gomez, Evan Turner, Jared Vanderbilt, and Brooklyn's 2020 first-round pick, which is lottery-protected, via Atlanta. Got all that?
I did. I'm still wrapping my head around it because I got out of bed literally like 17 minutes ago.
Good. Yeah. So if you're looking at that list or, you know, thinking about whatever, however many players or teams just got involved here, which team jumps out at you first?
Well, from a pure talent perspective, and I understand that there are several, you know, contractual issues moving forward, but Minnesota stands out as a team that just got a huge talent injection compared to what they gave up. Mm-hmm. The thing is, though, like both Malik Beasley, Juan Hernan Gomez are both free agents after this season. Mm-hmm. I think they can keep Jared Vanderbilt. Jared Vanderbilt is one of those guys who's on my, you know, Christian Wood Sekou Doumbouya list. Like that's a guy that I want to watch because I think he can be really, really good. Mm-hmm. So for me, that's a huge haul, especially if they actually end up keeping those guys long term. The thing is, that would hurt their cap flexibility if they're going after D'Angelo Russell. So we'll see what's up their sleeves, but mm-hmm. ultimately, I like the talent injection. Maybe this is even like something that they can move to Golden State. I don't know. We'll see. Not aggravation, maybe, but I mean,
right.
Yeah. We'll figure something out. I'm sure they'll figure something out. But I love the talent injection there. You have a legit shooter in Beasley. Mm-hmm. Hernan Gomez is like a 3-4 swingman who can like shoot, drive. He can defend it a little bit. He's tough. Vanderbilt is just a project big. And then they got the 2020 first round pick, you know, from Brooklyn via Atlanta. It's mm-hmm. this is a pretty huge haul for what is essentially Robert Covington, because the other guys, you know, it's are not that significant. Like,
right.
Jordan yeah. Bell, Noah Vonleh, you know, Keita Bates-Jobe, even though I think Keita is going to be okay. You know, yeah, I like it for Minnesota. And of course, I mean, we gotta talk about Atlanta here. They got Clint Capela for what feels like virtually nothing, right?
Yeah, that was my first reaction, because I was speaking with one of my colleagues while, you know, there was like Shams or Woj or someone tweeted like, we're getting close here. I'm like, okay, because the terms they reported are basically just Evan Turner and like draft compensation. I'm like, that can't be all that's going back, right? Like, you're not just going to get Clint Capela for salary matching and a mid first round pick, are you? And lo and behold, yes, they are. I mean, they took on Nene's contract, which is a $10 million expiring, which is no sweat off their back. They're still under the salary cap this year, as far as I know. And they were projected to have the most cap space in the league this summer. So, you know, Nene comes off their books after this year. And now Capela, who we talked about 12 hours ago, is signed to a very reasonable contract. Moving forward, they just addressed their big need for a center. You know, we mentioned them maybe being interested in Andre Drummond or Steven Adams or whoever. Well, now you have Clint Capela, who signed $14.9 million this year, $16 million next year, $17.1 in 2021-2022, $18.2 the following year. So you've got a guy under contract, like a reasonable contract yep. for the next 3+ years, who is not, I mean, he fits pretty well age-wise with Trey, John Collins, the rest of their young core. It's not like this guy is super old. He's 25, doesn't turn 26 until mid-May.
Yeah. This just goes back to what we talked about yesterday when we were talking about how centers are being undervalued. Mm-hmm. I even wrote a post on my Danish Patreon about this, which is making me look really, really smart, because I concluded that piece by saying, you know, if I was a GM, I would actually see if I could go out and find very good defensive players, you know, for virtually nothing because they're so undervalued, because mm-hmm. ultimately that's going to help my team. Clint Capela, to me, was just a year ago, he was a near all-star. Yeah, yeah. He was having, right now, he's having a down year scoring-wise. Like, he's very, very capable, you know, off of pick and rolls. So, like, he can finish plays. He was at, what, 16 points last year?
Something yes. along those lines? 16.6 points, 12.7 rebounds, 1.5 blocks. I mean, he's limited in what he can do, right? He's not a unicorn big. He's not going to shoot right. threes. He's going to just rim roll and put back dunk, basically, but that's fine. Like, it's almost valuable to have guys who know their roles, and maybe he adds shooting range in time, but if not, they have John Collins there, who we talked about in the last episode too, who's a guy who can, you know, play the four, frankly, on both ends of the floor, but yep. he can be an interchangeable 4-5. He can also be a rim roller, but he's got some stretch to him as well. So, you know, having Capela in there soaking up space, you know, I don't think you're going to station Capela in the corner on offense and have anyone respect him. I think he's going to be more of a paint-bound center, but, you know, he's going to be an enormous lob threat, pick-and-roll threat with Trae Young, who's already one of the league's better pick-and-roll guards. So yeah. it's a good marriage between skill set of Trae and then what Capela is good at as well.
Right. But more importantly, and you actually brought this up, the salary flexibility they're getting now with mm-hmm. Capela, instead of, you know, trading for Drummond or Steven Adams,
yeah.
you know, guys who are making virtually double the amount.
Yeah.
This is like, maybe Clint Capela in terms of raw talent is not as good as Andre Drummond, but it's not necessarily all that far off. Mm-hmm. I think Capela is better than Steven Adams. And I think he's like 80% of what Drummond is, at least as in terms of, you know, rebounding and defense and all that.
Mm-hmm.
And for to get a guy who's 80% Drummond for half the price of Drummond,
right?
That's a win.
Yeah, it's just good math.
It's good math. Now let's flip it over to Houston, because I don't love it.
Yeah, I mean, so. For Atlanta, I can say no matter what happens from this point forward, I really like the deal for them. I just don't see. I can understand, you know, Sam Vecenie, a friend of the pod, tweeted out earlier tonight that he didn't really see the urgency for Atlanta to make a move now, knowing they were going to be one of the few teams with cap space, knowing it's going to be a buyer's market in free agency, that they could get a guy like Drummond, or they could flip a pick to get Steven Adams, whatever. I understand that sentiment, but at the same time, there's no guarantee that those offers that are on the table now are there in June. You could always go after Drummond, but as you just said, he's going to cost twice as much as Capella, or close to twice as much as Capella. So I get wanting to just fill this void now and just say, you know what, this is our core moving forward. We've got Trey, Collins, Capella, Reddish, Herder, DeAndre Hunter. Let's give these guys a chance to build, and then come the summertime, we can reevaluate and see what we want to do. And I haven't seen updated projections in terms of the Hawks cap space this summer, but I'm sure they have. I think they've got to have at least $50 million still. And it's, again, like, teams just aren't going to have cap space this summer. Very few teams will have it more than the mid-level exception. So they can, you know, if they're serious about accelerating their rebuild here, if they think we've got the core, but maybe they don't want to complicate their 2021 cap room just in case a superstar decides to sign with them, all right, throw a balloon deal, a one-year balloon deal, much like the Sixers did with J.J. Redick a couple years ago.
Yeah.
Call up Danilo Gallinari and say, we'll give you 1 year, $30 million.
Yeah.
And you could still do that. So, yeah, for the of all of the teams in this deal, I am most confident that Atlanta will not regret it. And I don't think they need to make any additional moves between now and Thursday to justify what they did here.
Agreed.
Houston is where I can understand what they're doing.
Yeah.
They're just, I mean, they're going all in on small ball. I mean, they got Jordan Bell back to, I guess, I don't think he's going to start at center for them. I mean, Tim McMahon of ESPN came out and said PJ Tucker is their starting center right now, which, you know, that's the choice.
We talked about that. Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, I mean, it's been working for them. Dan Devine of The Ringer had a good piece the other day about it, how they're just pushing it kind of, they're pushing small ball to its logical extreme. I mean, and they played the Hornets on Tuesday night without Capella. They only played eight guys, and that's even a stretch because they played Hartenstein for 3 minutes. They took 60 threes. 60 of their 97 shots were three-pointers. They only hit 20 of them, but they still won 125 to 110. So this is just what they're doing. They're going totally all in on small ball. PJ Tucker is going to be the starting center. Covington's going to be in there. You have Harden, Gordon, Westbrook, McLemore, Daniel House, Austin Rivers, Cephalosha. Mm. And it's basically like a dare. Like, all right, you can pound us on the boards. You can pound us inside. But we're just going to jack up more threes than you've ever thought possible. And we're going to just bank on the math. This is like the logical extreme of Morey ball.
Yeah. My problem with that is the three is more so a dangerous weapon in the regular season than the playoffs to some extent, because the playoffs is a different beast. Mm-hmm. You know, teams prepare differently.
Right.
You know, they can make adjustments like for on a game-to-game basis. And it's not uncommon for teams to shoot a lower percentage from outside in the playoffs compared to their regular seasons. Mm-hmm. Drives and free throws and a little bit more, you know, 80s, 90s plays is going on in the playoffs. So you're going to need a shot-blocking presence there. Mm-hmm. Like, who is that going to be? Like, Jordan Bell? Presumably, maybe. But I just have some serious concerns in a playoff setting where it becomes more half-court, where you're less inclined to give up transition threes for obvious reasons. Like, what do you do there? Like, you can't ask James Harden to just take, like, 17 step-back threes a game in the playoffs. It's not going to go well.
Right. I mean, we've seen what happens. They missed 27 straight threes in a game seven, and it did not go well for them. It led them to the path where their starting center is now 6'6".
Yeah. I actually appreciate what Houston is trying to do. I don't think it's going to work. I don't like the plan, but I can appreciate them going all out. I appreciate Daryl Morey for basically saying, you know what, screw it, I'm all in. Yeah. I'm going to go for it. I can respect the hell out of that.
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean I believe in the project.
Yeah. I mean, he's operating like a guy who knows he's going to get fired at the end of the year, or doesn't care that he's going to get fired at the end of the year.
If I were him, I wouldn't care, because that ownership circle right there is truly, truly ghastly.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the report came out Monday from CNBC's Jabari Young that Fertitta was pressuring Morey into getting under the tax line. They accomplished that with this trade. So congratulations once again to Tillman Fertitta. I'm sure he's going to deem it a happy accident, as he always does. I mean, we'll see what, like, I almost want to give the Rockets an incomplete here, because I do think there's probably another move they make between now and Thursday. So I don't want to totally kill them and then see them add a credible center and be like, oh, okay, well, now this makes more sense.
Right, but right now we have to take, you know, we have to take things at face value for what it is right now. I understand. Right. Like, if a trade comes up that actually gives them something more of a big presence moving forward, yeah, let's pivot from there.
Yeah. I'm curious to see what they do next, or if they have another move up their sleeve. I would assume that they do. But if they don't, I mean, this will be, you know, people are like, this is, the NBA is boring now. It's all just a bunch of threes. Everyone plays the same. Well, the Rockets are going to shoot more threes than anyone, but they're not going to play the same, because they're going to have no one above 6'6 playing for them. I guess Covington is now their tallest rotation player. Right? My
goodness, yeah. Yeah. Like, him and Tabo are both like 6'7, right?
I think Cub is 6'8, 6'9. Oh no, he's listed 6'7 now. He lost an inch.
Oh yeah, in the big rebranding of the heights. Yeah,
yeah,
like yeah. R.I.P. Everyone is like an inch or two lower. It's very very funny.
Yeah. So I guess he is technically, wow, that's hilarious. I mean, look, he is. We talked about him earlier. He is a great defender, I think. Better almost in an off-ball setting than on, but not a bad defender on ball by any means. But I think he's optimized similar to what Matisse Thybulle is doing in Philly this year, where he's just absolutely wreaks havoc in passing lanes, creates transition opportunities, and that's going to be extremely valuable on a team with Russell Westbrook, who loves running in transition and, you know, is one of the league's still most terrifying players in transition. Same with James Harden. Streaky three-point shooter, but he's certainly going to have a green light under D'Antoni. So,
right.
Would not surprise me. I mean, right now, his career high in terms of three-pointers per game is 7.2. He's averaged in the ballpark of 6 to 7 each of the past 4 or 5 years. I'm guessing he chucks closer to 10 once he gets to Houston.
I mean, I'm sure he'll be a nice asset. Don't mistake what I'm saying in terms of Houston that I don't think they just got a nice player. I think they did.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Covington is a very, very solid two-way player. I think he's kind of overrated, and I think this trade kind of shows it.
Mm-hmm.
His value and the league's overall fascination with versatile wings, I mean, I understand the value, absolutely. But I think it's becoming a little bit ridiculous. So from that perspective, I'm like, this is not a good trade. But yeah. I like Covington as a player. I like the fit next to Harden. I like the fit to some extent next to Westbrook. Like as you said, because Westbrook will attack the rim and he will collapse defenses. And, you know, lo and behold, who's in the corner? Rocco. Mm-hmm. So there is definitely a fit there that I like. My problem lies primarily with the fact that defensively, Robert Covington is going to be the first and last line of defense, and I don't think that's great.
Yeah. Well, unless Mr. Cash Considerations himself, Jordan Bell.
Right. That depends. Like, if Jordan Bell basically revives his career, because, like, it was dead in the water in Minnesota.
Yeah.
Like, it was not great. No. If he comes into Houston and is like, you know what? this is a fresh start. I had all that momentum going for me in Golden State. It just didn't materialize. Now is the time. I mean, we saw what Houston did with Ben McLemore, who I just wrote a piece on Forbes.
Yep.
You know, McLemore has just found new life in Houston. So maybe Jordan Bell's the same thing. And if that's the case, you know, maybe in a couple months, we're going to be recording podcasts saying, well, you know what, Houston, they actually did tremendously. Let's, you know, let's pivot now. I don't know. But I guess we'll see. But you're giving Houston an incomplete, which I find interesting because, you know, before we started recording, you actually told me you would also give Denver an incomplete. That one I totally agree with you, though.
Yeah, well, Houston, I mean, I give them an incomplete just because I want to see what they, if they add a center, what else they do between now and Thursday. But in terms of value added and lost, I agree with you. I'm one of the staunchest Robert Covington stands there is. I've loved the guy for longer than most people have been watching him or were calling him a patsy back in the day. So don't take this as a Covington slate. But, I mean, effectively, the Rockets gave up both Capella and their first-round pick this year for Covington. That strikes me as an overpay.
Correct.
And I mean, yes, they dumped Nene. You know, they bring in Jordan Bell, they duck the tax, so Fertitta's happy, so it's not just that, but still, I mean, that's a lot to give up. I just think Capella is the best player of anyone who gets moved tonight. Capella was the best player in this trade.
I agree.
And I think Covington's the second best, but usually you want to be getting the best player if you're giving up another good player plus a pick. So,
well, I'll say as much, though. Like, some teams, I think if you're a team with tremendous overall talent, you can afford to sacrifice some talent in terms of fit.
That's true.
I just don't think Houston is overwhelmed with talent.
Right. Like, do you feel any more confident in Houston's ability to go deep in the playoffs now than you did before this trade?
No, I think of that chance as less. No.
Yeah. Like, I wonder, I mean, it's all matchup dependent, right? I mean, if they match up with the Clippers, maybe this helps them because the Clippers also don't have a super dominant front court, and maybe Covington can play, you know, can give them the wing defender to slow down one of Kawhi or Paul George. So that could help, but
Still have one of Kawhi or Paul George left, though.
Right. Well, PJ Tucker's pulling double duty then.
And that's what I'm afraid of. Like, P.J. Tucker is 77 years old.
Yeah. Well, but I'm also afraid of a Lakers matchup.
That's like, the big one, right?
Yeah. P.J. Tucker at center versus Anthony Davis and Dwight Howard and JaVale McGee and then LeBron James. Like, Covington will be on LeBron, but Covington can't stop LeBron.
Nope.
So, nope. I think we're going to see some tomfoolery. If the Rockets are, like, within, you know, that 4-5-6 and they can drop down to 6 so they can duck the Lakers, I think they're going to strategically rest players in the final week or two of the season to ensure they dodge the Lakers as long as possible.
But like, even if they like beat the Clippers, theoretically, and I don't think they do.
No.
And they avoid the Lakers, like Denver's still there.
Yeah.
Nikola Jokic would tear them apart.
Yeah. Yeah, and Utah, too. I mean, Gobert is going to have 30 rebounds and 20 screen assists every game.
Well, yeah, I mean, you're not wrong. I do love the screen assists.
Yeah, walking triple-double, Rudy Gobert. but yeah, let's go into Denver, because that one, I think, is definitely the most incomplete, you know, getting basically, I mean, they didn't give up a like anything necessarily that they were going to have long term, because Beasley and Hernan Gomez are both restricted free agents this summer. You know, they tried to reach an agreement on an extension with Beasley heading into the season. I think it was 3 years, $30 million that they offered him. He shot that down.
Yeah.
It's going to get expensive in Denver pretty quickly once Jamal Murray's max contract extension kicks in. You know, Jokic is on a max deal. They also have Gary Harris on a big deal. Will Barton's at $13.7 million. If they try to retain Jeremy Grant, like, they very feasibly could be taxpayers next or this in 2020, 2021, especially if they were hoping to retain Beasley too. So I think you can argue for sure that it's a talent downgrade for them.
I think it's more than just something you can debate. I think I think that is written in stone, to be honest with you. Yeah.
I mean, they did get Houston's 2020 first, so who knows? You know, what, maybe this trade totally backfires on Houston and they slip a little bit and moves into a mid first. But
we don't know if there's protection, right?
I don't. Who knows? The details are still coming out on this thing. But as far as any reports I've seen, have not said there's protection on it.
Okay.
But yeah, I mean, either way, you got to figure it's best case scenario. It's in the mid-teens, but it's probably in the 20s.
Right. Yeah. I mean, this was not the consolidation trade that I was hoping they'd pull.
Mm-hmm.
We were talking about like how many talents they had and if they could just basically combine some of them to get someone better. That would be probably beneficial to them moving into the playoffs. And instead, this was like a cost-cutting move, ultimately, because now they avoid paying Beasley and Hernan Gomez. And they sacrificed Jared Vanderbilt, which, I mean, for me, that's a tough one. And what they get back is basically Keita Bates-Jobe, who's, how many years does he have left on his rookie deal, too, after this one, right?
Double checking.
I mean, he looks was a first, like, right?
He has a non-guaranteed year next season, and then Bird in 2021.
Right. Oh, he was a second rounder. That's true. Mm-hmm. For some reason, I have him pegged as the 27th pick in the draft a couple years ago. So he was 48th.
Yeah. Okay. So he'll I guess be unrestricted. I'm too tired to think. I don't know. Yeah. No, he's restricted.
Restricted because it's 3 years. Yeah. Okay. Okay. But so they actually have him for one more year on the cheap. So I guess this, to some extent, was just extending like a rookie player contract for a year, but basically downgrading in talent. Because I mean, look, Malik Beasley is, I would argue Malik Beasley is the third best player in this deal.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
So yeah, this is not what I had in mind for Denver, and I hope that they do something different with what they've got in, because I'm so far, if this is all they got and we have to erase like the NA on it, like then this becomes a bad grade. Like if this is all that is, woof. I mean, then I would rather take my chance and keep Malik Beasley. Like, look, Gary Harris right now is not good.
Right.
And I love Gary Harris, and it hurts me saying that, but he's been atrocious, and you know, I spoke with CJ McBride, friend of the podcast, Nugget speed writer, and he was like, he's hurt. Like, he's hurt, and he's hurt all the time. It's a problem. So, you know, maybe it's just my logic, but I would have gone to Malik Beasley and gone, yeah, you know what? Let's figure something out in the summer, because Gary is not going to be our long-term option at the two.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I finally dropped Gary Harris for my fantasy team this week. It hurt a lot. But yeah, he's been actively just not helpful for most of the season at this point.
Right. So giving up Beasley is just weird timing, I feel like.
Yeah, I mean, Woj just tweeted an updated written through story, and he says Denver is going to be active in offering Houston's 2020 first round pick, active offering and deals to continue upgrading their roster. So I don't think the Nuggets are done necessarily. Now, does that mean they're going after a big upgrade? Like, I saw a couple people throwing out, like, oh, does this mean they're going after Drew Holiday? I don't know. I don't know that it's going to be an upgrade to that extent. Does it mean they're going after, like, a Marcus Morris type, or like an Andre Iguodala? Who knows? Maybe. That probably seems more realistic to me than a star splash. Like,
right.
But I don't know. I could be wrong.
So I'm just thinking about this from a different perspective with the Denver deal, actually. Moving Hernan Gomez, I realized he didn't play much, but he did play almost a quarter a game.
Mm-hmm.
This could be a move to just basically free up Michael Porter, though.
Yeah, it definitely could.
That's an asset in and of itself.
Yeah. The one concern for Denver right now is that just everyone is hurt.
Yeah.
Gary Harris came back on Tuesday, and Jamal Murray played 20 minutes on Tuesday, which is great. But I think Jeremy Grant, I believe I saw that he left the game with a knee injury, I think, something like that.
Wait, here last night?
I think so.
Yeah, I have no idea in terms of who played and who won because I saw nothing.
Yeah, good.
Okay. I saw nothing.
I was watching Lakers Spurs. I just saw on Twitter that I think he suffered. I don't know the extent of it. Maybe it's not that bad. But Millsap is also hurt.
Yeah.
And Porter right now missed Tuesday's game with an ankle injury. So if they do make another trade, it's just going to be tough for them to field a full team. Because, Hernan Gomez played 28 minutes Tuesday night against the Blazers. Beasley played 24. Vanderbilt plays 7. So that part's not great. But once they get these players in, they might take a tiny step back between now and the All-Star break just because it's going to be tough to get these guys up to speed. They played on Wednesday night at Utah. I can't imagine they're going to have these players in uniform by then. So you got to assume they're going to be shorthanded for that.
On Utah on that one for sure.
Yeah. Then they're at Phoenix Sunday, and then two home games, Spurs-Lakers, before the All-Star break. So, even if the next couple of games are rough, it's not the end of the world. They're pretty close to the All-Star break, so that part is good. But, yeah, I'm very curious to see, just kind of Denver's evaluation of where they are relative to, do they think they are ready to contend for a title right now? Or do they think like, okay, we've kind of overperformed based on, the age of most of our young guys, Jokic's age 24 season, Murray's age 22 season, Michael Porter Jr., has barely played this year and he's like scratching the surface of his potential. Do we need to make this all-in push now? Or, does this trade give us a little bit more time to get our bearings, and then next year or the year after that is when we really hit our stride?
Time will tell.
Yeah. I don't know.
I don't either. And that's... so many things have to be absorbed, I think. Mm-hmm. This is a major shakeup for 4 major organizations.
Yeah.
There are presumably follow-up moves. We still have, last night, before I went to bed, there were Andrew Wiggins chatter as well, so.
Well, yeah, that was the last thing I wanted to touch on, actually. So,
go ahead.
Kevin O'Connor, tonight, of The Ringer, reported that the trade talks were originally, this Capella, Covington, whatever, was originally trying to include Golden State and Russell as well. But Kevin O'Connor reported Tuesday night that if D'Angelo Russell ends up in Minnesota, Andrew Wiggins will go to the Warriors. Every iteration of a deal discussed between Golden State and Minnesota involves Wiggins.
Wow. Well, see, you miss something when you go to bed early. Okay.
Yeah. And so apparently the holdup is the draft compensation.
Yeah.
So he reported the Warriors have been offered Minnesota's 2020 first round pick and Brooklyn's 2020 first round pick, which would be sent via Atlanta as blah, 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 as the, the pick they ended up getting in this trade. So, all right, cool. They have the draft compensation that they were offering to the Warriors, which is great. But the Warriors apparently wanted future first instead of picks in 2020. Most importantly, they want an unprotected first-round pick in 2021, which will have a much stronger draft class than the one coming in June.
Hmm. I mean, now that, that Minnesota did get Brooklyn's 2020 first, maybe that does free them up to just, you know, move the 2021 and then say, well, okay, then we'll take the Brooklyn pick off the table and we replace it with the 2021. Like, yeah, you sacrifice a better pick, presumably. But, I mean, you're also getting back D'Angelo Russell.
Right.
I would probably do that if I'm Minnesota, to be honest. Because now they've coveted him for so long. You also, like, if you're Minnesota, you put yourself in a weird situation, right? Because on the one hand, like, you basically made sure that everyone, including my dead grandparents, knows that they really want D'Angelo Russell. So Russell is probably sitting there just going, wow, they really want me. That's great.
Right.
And then when they start like, well, I don't know about giving up the 2021 pick. I don't know. That becomes a problem because then D'Angelo is sitting there going, seriously? What? I'm D'Lo, man. What are you doing? So if they actually complete a trade and they're like very hesitant about it, like he's going to come into Minnesota like being very, very confused about the whole thing.
Yeah.
Basically my point is this, go big or go home.
Yeah, and I mean, Minnesota is just in such a weird spot now that it's pulled off all of these moves because I haven't double-checked this, so I could be wrong, but I don't believe Turner, Beasley, Hernan Gomez, any of those guys can get aggregated in trades. So
no, that's the thing. You can make individual trades, though.
Right. So, I guess, you could do, like, Wiggins for Russell, and then Malik Beasley for Alec Burks or something like that. Or, like, correct, for Glenn Robinson in the third, whatever, and effectively make it a bigger trade, but, you know, break it off into separate trades to make it cap legal.
Can we just remove the aggravation rule? Aggregation rule?
I, at this point, my brain is not computing the aggregation rule at the moment. So, yes. Totally gone.
I feel so bad for you, Brian. Not that I've been in this position 80 plus times on this podcast.
We don't go into cap nuances at 2 a.m. most of the time.
Most of the time being the key phrase.
Yeah. But I mean, if you look at, like, all right, say they included Wiggins for Russell. Like, if you look at that roster, it's really weird now. Like, it'd be Towns and Russell, mm-hmm. it'd be Evan Turner and Alan Crabb's expiring contracts. It'd be Okogie, it'd be Jarrett Culver, it'd be Malik Beasley. Then, like, what else? I mean, I don't know. There's, like, nothing there. I don't know that they are significantly better. I guess if Golden State doesn't want their 2020 first, they'll probably have a high first-round pick as well. But, like, no one's going to sign with that team. They're not going to be a big free agent landing spot. They still have Gorgui Dieng on their books for another year at $17.3 million. I guess that's probably their best play is use him as an expiring next year for teams that are looking to create cap space in 2021.
Yeah, and then just go past 2021 and say, we forego free agency in 2021.
Yeah, because no, I mean... Okay, who's going to sign? You know, no one's going to sign there.
No, I mean, like, forego it in terms of, you know, clearing cap space and go that route. Like,
if you're a
team, like you just alluded to, that goes into that, you know, free agency period and say, hey, every team in the NBA, we don't care about free agency because we know, you know, we're not good enough to warrant any attention from these guys. Like, Giannis is not going to come here.
Nope.
So we're willing to take on... you know, contracts that extends to 2021, like going to 2022 or 2023, you know, we'll give up Gorgui Dieng, we'll give up some pieces, but we're willing to take on long-term contracts as long as the player's not, you know, bad.
Right.
Because we want to satisfy, you know, Towns and Russell.
Yeah. I was about to suggest Al Horford, but then you said as long as he's not bad. So...
Well, that might be a Sixers thing, though.
that's true. Well, I don't think it's going to be any better next to Karl Anthony Towns.
That is very, very fair. But basically, just rule of thumb in the NBA: don't play Al Horford at the four
right
anymore. Like, yeah. He's 116 years old.
Yeah, only a casual 33, 34 going on 60 though.
Yeah, It's not great.
Yeah, I mean, it's like I stand by thinking the Warriors are just, they don't need to be in a rush to do this move, because it, you know, as you said, Minnesota has been so transparent about its desire to land D'Angelo Russell. It's not like they're gonna turn around in June and be like, oh no, we're good, we're good. Karl Anthony Towns actually really enjoyed getting his brains beaten in for two more months. He was definitely a good spirit about it, was not snarky at all, loved the experience, is very happy here. Like, they're, you know, they're clearly gonna be willing to dangle Andrew Wiggins at any point for D'Angelo Russell, and, you know, hell, maybe they get lucky. You know, for the Warriors, you know, our logic is, all right, we'll see where their pick lands. Maybe they can package Russell and their pick for a superstar or whatever.
Right.
For the Timberwolves, the logic is, well, maybe they get lucky. Maybe they get the number one pick, or maybe they get a top three pick or whatever. And then, you know, a prospect rises toward the top of the board that Golden State is really interested in, or you turn it into a three-team deal where, you know, Golden State gets something else from the team that gets the number three pick, because they want more of a win now player anyway. So I still think, especially given how bad these two teams are, that a permutation of this trade involving draft picks is the one that makes the most sense, and I think both sides would want more certainty in terms of where they land in the lottery. But it would not surprise me if they revisit Wiggins for Russell as the salary base. And at that point, the Warriors aren't going to be hard capped next year. Like, come July 1st, they will not be hard capped unless they use, I don't even think they can use a non-taxpayer mid-level next year. I could be wrong, but I think they might even be over the tax line already. So they couldn't even be hard capped, but yeah, they're way over. So yeah, the hard cap will not be an issue for them next year. Which will give them more flexibility in that regard to actually make these trades legal too.
Yeah. I mean, I'm definitely looking forward to, you know, Andrew Wiggins, Draymond Green relationships to flourish.
I'm keeping my property. I'm keeping my property on Andrew Wiggins Island, because I could see a world wherein playing between Curry, Thompson, and Green, he's actually, like, he's just like rich man's Harry B.
Mm-hmm. I mean, that's if you subscribe to the idea of a multiverse where there are infinite possibilities. Sure, I can see one, two. Sure.
You don't think you would be totally out on Wiggins becoming not necessarily like an all-star, but better than he has been in Minnesota? You don't think it's
here's what
possible,
I think,
if not likely?
Here's what I think. You know how when Harrison Barnes was with Golden State, he was obviously in a limited role. So when he went to Dallas, like he became more of a high volume guy, and that's who he is now.
Mm-hmm.
Andrew Wiggins is basically going to be like if Harrison Barnes returned to Golden State with his current game.
Yeah, like the inverse. Yeah.
Yeah. That's it. So basically, ultimately, what I'm saying is Golden State just got Harrison Barnes back if they did it.
Rich man's Harrison Barnes, though. Literally.
Are we sure about that? He hasn't really been good over the past couple months now.
Well,
like, we praised Wiggins to start the season, and he looked really good.
Right.
Kind of dropped off since then.
But just literally, he is richer than Harrison Barnes. He's being paid more than Harrison Barnes. There
now, that is true. A wealthier Harrison Barnes.
Correct.
There we go.
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely a domino that I'd be interested to see, you know, if we're, because now we have to look ahead, right? The trade deadline is now basically 36 hours away as we finish recording this thing. So there's still a lot of time for moves to be made. I'm intrigued to see what happens if this D'Angelo thing gets revisited now that Minnesota has the Brooklyn pick, what Denver does, what Minnesota does, what Houston does to fill that center void. I think Atlanta is the only one that's like, all right, we're good. See you in June. We'll see where our draft pick lands. Peace.
Yeah, I think so too. Atlanta came out of this looking really, really good.
Yeah. I I really like it for them, and that makes me nervous because usually in these four-team deals, whichever team you think got the best player oftentimes regrets it the most. Like, I just go back to the Dwight trade, where it's like,
yeah, that
oh,
was
man.
The first one that came to mind.
Yeah, like, the Lakers did so well. Or, like, oh, wow, Philly got Bynum. Or, oh, well, Denver got Iguodala. And then all three guys left within a year, and Orlando's over here with, like, Vucevic and Harkless and a first-round pick. It's like, oh, they were actually the ones who won.
We didn't have a podcast back then, but mm-hmm. I, you should know, was on the Magic did so well from day one.
Mm.
Because, look, the Kobe Dwight angle,
yeah.
Like, even before he arrived in L.A., there were definitely feelings of, this could backfire a lot.
And, right. Like,
oh, and Steve Nash was like 257 years old.
Right. I don't remember where I was so focused on the Philly part of that trade at the time that I don't remember having thoughts toward Atlanta, but I bet you could go dig in my old Bleacher Report archive and I probably have a terrible take in there. So if any internet sleuths wants to go digging and old takes expose me, go right ahead.
Go for it. And now you have to hit the hay because you can't do what we Europeans do. Be functional after like 1 a.m., 2 a.m.
Yeah. Well, I have to. I'm spending all of my free time this week calling realtors and mortgage lessors. So I have another call tomorrow, which is just so much fun. It's really exactly how I wanted to spend the days leading up to
oh,
the trade.
Oh, no.
Deadline.
I have to buy a house. It's so ghastly.
You know what? It's terrible. I don't ever want. I just want. This is like, I hate being an adult. But more, I've consolidated my retirement recently, and then I did this, and I'm ready to just go play video games for a week and not be a real person anymore. But I can't. So I'm looking forward to August already. That's all I'm gonna say.
I mean, I'm late to the game because I got Hitman 2 recently, and it's an old game by now, but I can highly recommend it.
I got that Fallen Jedi game like 2 months ago, and I haven't touched it because that's what happens to me during the NBA season.
It's good, but it was way overhyped. Like, okay. it's a fun game that you can like put in 20 hours to or something like that, and then you put it down and you basically forget everything about it.
Oh. Alright, well if I could manage 20 hours, that sounds like a perfect thing to do during All-Star Weekend.
Yeah. Yeah, that seems fair.
Also, shout out to the TNT crew tonight for debuting their new show. I thought it was enjoyable. It's like dumb and fun. Adam Lefko is the host with Shaq and D-Wade. Turns out D-Wade hates oysters, which I would have never guessed, but he really, really did not enjoy. I all had to eat an oyster. And I'm sure you can go on Twitter and find a meme of his face when he did it. But yeah, not a happy camper. So,
Wow, that was a company man line right there, huh?
Yeah, thank you. Yep. All right. I'm going to bed. Thank you all for listening. If there's another trade that breaks in the next 3 hours, just follow Mort on Twitter because I will be asleep. In the meantime, please follow us on Twitter at the NBA Pod. You can find our Twitter handles in our bio, so give us a follow as well. You can also find us on iTunes and wherever else podcasts are found. On iTunes, please subscribe, download, leave some 5-star reviews. We're now being hosted on Spreaker, so check them out on Twitter at Spreaker. Until next time, I'm Brian Toporek, and I was joined, as always, by Morten Jensen. Have a good one, Mort.
You too, Brian. Sleep tight, adult man.
Thank you.